Welcome back to the crime show. And we are here with the first episode of a brand new series, Faceless and Forgotten. I'm just gonna cut every monologue or the dialogues. If you wanna know what Faceless and Forgotten is, the trailer is out on my Instagram ID at the True Stories with Alicia. Go follow it now. And you can check out the trailer there. So let's get started. So our very first faceless and forgotten person is H.H. Holmes. Let's just get started. I'm going to cut the introduction. We're going to keep it short. It's our very first episode. People should not get bored. He was born in New Hampshire on 16th May in 1869. Holmes is widely considered the United States' very first serial killer. His given name was Herman Webster Mudgett. Unlike many serial killers, Holmes had a fairly normal childhood with respectable parents. There are no credible accounts of animal abuse or other signs beyond rumors. However, when he was young, two bullies did try to terrify him by dragging him into a doctor's office. Rather than being afraid, Holmes was fascinated by the human skeleton there. He later credited this moment with his decision to study medicine. In 1878, Holmes married Clara Lovering. They were both 17. After dropping out of a college in Vermont, Holmes went to study medicine at the University of Michigan. Although he bought his wife and baby son, he already had begun to have affairs. Clara showed signs of physical abuse, often appearing with black eye. She moved back to New Hampshire without him before he graduated. Holmes started his trademark insurance fraud schemes in medical school. He took out insurance policies for fictional people. Then he stole bodies from the lab, disfigured them, and claimed that they have been killed in accidents. Holmes moved from place to place, and odd circumstances seemed to follow everywhere. In New York, there were rumors that Holmes killed a little boy spread after he was seen with a boy who disappeared soon after. Holmes claimed that the boy had simply returned home. A little bit of vocabulary problem here. Police were never involved, but Holmes left town. He dabbled in fraud, using cadavers to collect life insurance policies and selling fake medicines. He ran away from debts and rarely paid his rent. In Philadelphia, a boy died after purchasing his drugs from the pharmacy where Holmes worked. Again, he skipped town. Right before moving to Chicago, he changed his name to Henry Howard Holmes to escape connection with any of his previous crimes. Although his divorce from Clara was never finalized, Holmes married Myrta Belknap, and they had a daughter. In Chicago, Holmes found work at a drugstore, which he eventually bought. Young women came from around the country eager to work in big cities. These women were new to the area and were happy to accept any job that was offered. James also purchased the land across the street in his wife's name to avoid debtors. He made plans for a building on the property with stores on the first floor and apartments on the second. Holmes' design had some disturbing quirks. There was a hidden compartment between two floors and a staircase between floors that was only accessible through a trap door in second story bathroom. Okay. The second floor was confusingly designed with windowless rooms and doors that inexplicably opened into brick walls. Maybe most disturbingly, some rooms could only be opened from the outside because homes had repeatedly changed construction companies while building. No one but him ever had access to the horrors of the full floor plan. Oh man, this man is giving me creeps already. He referred to the three-floor block-long building as his castle. All the while, Holmes continued swindling anyone he could. He often hid goods in the hidden compartments of the house, refusing to pay. He also had a giant safe put in, and once locked, an employee inside. Okay.
It's not at all weird. I'm fine. Cool.
And Holmes was satisfied to find that the safe was soundproof. Fuck. Holmes hired a young couple to work for him, Ned and Julia Connor. Why is there Connor in every case I look? Martin family disappearance, Connor. Like, fucking shit. They worked in pharmacy and lived on the second floor. Soon Julia and Holmes were having an affair, despite their spouses also living there. Okay. Ned packed up and left, while Julia became involved in Holmes' schemes. He took out debts and started business in her name. In 1989, Julia and her young daughter, Pearl, disappeared. Holmes later claimed that Julia died from botched abortion, although he never took responsibility for their deaths. Today, it is accepted that Holmes likely murdered both of them. It is like in those 9 confirmed victims, they both are counted in it. Around this same time, Holmes started a new business. He convinced people that he invented a new glass bending technique that required a large furnace in his basement. No one ever saw him bend any glass. Just for FYI. But the furnace was useful for one thing. Making young women disappear.
What the fucking shit.
Women came from all over to find work in big cities and stayed in boarding houses like homes.
There you go.
They usually had no friends in Chicago, and only limited communication with their families back home was through letters. In other words, there was usually no one to report them missing or even notice anything was wrong. Once the furnace was installed, the disappearance increased. Emmeline Sigrand came to Chicago looking for work in 1892. He employed her as a typist, and by Christmas she had disappeared. Holmes explained her absence would become his go-to line. She has gone to Europe to get married. Okay.
Why would someone go to Europe to get married?
That's like scam right there. Okay, whatever. We are not judging anyone until this thing is over. Like the narration or whatever it is. Oh, fuck. There is a lot more disgusting things. Fucking shit. Kill me now. And that's the background music you get in a quarantine house. It's a lovely background music. Girls who came to Chicago for work were usually cut off from their social networks. So there was no one to dispute his claim. In preparation of World's Fair, Holmes told everyone he was putting in a third floor to serve as hotel. Although he never completed the floor, he made thousands from investors. Before any of his crimes could catch up to him, Holmes set fire to the building in 1893 to claim the insurance money. He again took to traveling the country. Fortunately for him, he met two young heiress sisters, Minnie and Nanny Williams. He married Minnie within a few months. He convinced his new wife to transfer the deed to her Fort Worth property to a man named Alexander Bond. Bond was simply one of Holmes' many aliases. He also met another swindler to team up with, Benjamin Peitzel. They made plans to, you know, after what happens to Benjamin, you're gonna know karma is a bitch. Seriously, karma is a big time bitch. And it's real too. They made plans to construct a replica of Chicago building in Fort Worth. This plan featured the same odd features. Holmes never got a chance to use it. Minnie's sister came to visit, and they wrote to their aunt that they planned to accompany a friend to Europe. Neither were heard from again. Okay, I got a little bit of confused there. You could hear it from my narration. Oh, okay, wait a minute. I got it. So he married Minnie. Okay, I got it. Let it be. Bond transferred the deed to Benton T. Lyman, an alias of Peitzel. As if it wasn't convoluted enough, Holmes served as the notary. After taking out thousands of dollars in mortgages, he and Peitzel skipped town. They moved to St. Louis, where Holmes bought another drugstore, and they ran some scams together. In St. Louis, he was briefly incarcerated for selling mortgages. Courts. In jail, he met an outlaw who listened as Holmes explained his plan to fake his own death for a hefty insurance payout. In exchange for $500, the outlaw gave Holmes the name of a reliable lawyer for the scheme. The plan failed when the insurance company became suspicious and refused to pay out the policy. They packed up again for Philadelphia. The new plan was for Holmes and Peitzel to defraud an insurance company by cashing in on Peitzel's life insurance policy. Peitzel was supposed to play the part of an inventor named B.F. Perry and be disfigured and killed in a lab experiment gone wrong, but at the last minute, Peitzel got cold feet. To tone down a good scam, Holmes went through with it anyway. What the fuck? Oh, sorry, I lost where I was. Okay. He got Peitzel drunk, gave him a large dose of chloroform, why did I say fame? And burned the body. After staging the scene to look like an accident, Holmes and his young wife fled. Then the $10,000 payout went to Petzl's widow. But Holmes was able to convince her that Petzl died owing him money. He offered to accompany the middle three children to their aunt in Indianapolis. Okay. On the way, he found out that he was wanted by the police. He dragged the children all around the country on the run with him. Remarkably, at the same time, he also escorted Mrs. Petzl across the country on parallel route. Neither the children or the mother knew of the proximity to each other. The children even gave Holmes letter to mail to their mother, which he never did. Holmes continued to employ various aliases in this travel. He lied to Mrs. Petzl, maintaining that they had faked Benjamin to death and he was hiding out in London. At one point in Detroit, Mrs. Petzl and the children were separated by only a few blocks while carrying out two different lives with the woman and her children. Holmes was staying at third location with his wife, who had no idea what was going on. This man is crazy. I think he needs serious help. Like serious help. Eventually, he decided that the children were slowing him down and therefore he would have to die. He poisoned the youngest boy with cyanide. He locked up the two girls in a large trunk and drilled a hole in it. Using a hose in a hole of the trunk, asphyxiated the girls and buried their bodies in the basement of a rental home. A Philadelphia detective found the girls and then traced Holmes' trail from there. He was finally arrested in Boston for a horse theft in Texas. He killed more than five to nine people, and he got arrested for a horse theft? What the fuck? In 1895, I get confused, and I might have not corrected it. So sorry, I think. Holmes was put on a trial for murder of Benjamin Petzl, whatever it is, and was found guilty and sentenced to death. He was confessed to 27 murders and 6 attempted murders. Okay, fucking shit. Although he's not very reliable, a few of the murders he admitted to were of people still alive. Here, newspapers paid him over $7,000 for the confession, which were found to be at the least partially untrue. $7,000 back then. So, one fifth. So now it would be $250,000 maybe. I think that would be. If I'm wrong, tell me. If I'm correct, then don't tell me maybe. I don't know. He was a murderer. So let's just end this because I cannot take any more of this fuckery. My God. We'll just get into the facts and the victim list and other stuff. just end the case file or the script what I've written, because it's a lot. It's getting weird in my mind. Maybe weird for two. He was a murderer and a con artist and the subject of more than 50 lawsuits in Chicago alone. So he was not a reliable witness. Researchers have not been able to ascertain for sure his true number of victims. In 1896, Holmes was hanged at the Philadelphia County Prison. Since his death, Holmes looms large in popular culture and imaginations. Stories continue to circulate that he escaped the execution, and writers embellish stories of his murders and torture. Some even claim that he was London's Jack the Ripper. It is said that Jack the Ripper was, I think, the grandson or great-grandfather of H.H. Holmes. Or he was Jack the Ripper. So let's just get into facts for me to make this more uncomfortable for you. I'm never gonna see Sherlock Holmes ever again. Or anything that has Holmes. For a while. Not ever, but for a while. Man, this man gives me creeps. Okay. There is a lot of... Okay. Okay. So... Firstly, he was brought to justice by a horse. So, it's karma. Karma is a bitch. He was... this is an interesting one. He was married to three women at the same fucking time. And newspapers paid him for the confession, just like I told right now. Man, that man would be like the richest man right now. If he would have been still alive. Or if he is... And you're listening to this. I'm speechless. How could you be a con artist like this? Killing people, stealing bodies. Okay. So, let's get into his personal life. At the age of 16, he graduated from high school and took teaching jobs in Glimanton and later near Alton. On July 4, 1878, he married Clara Lovering in Alton. Their son Robert Lovering, Mudgate, was born on February 3, 1880, in Loudon, something like that, in New Hampshire. Holmes married Myrta Belclap in... That he was born on the... His first son was born on February 3rd, 1880 in Loudon, New Hampshire. And Holmes married again, Myrta Belknap, in Minneapolis, Minnesota in late 1866. After a few weeks, he filed for a divorce with Clara. Due to some legal problem, it was never finalized. And he married one more woman, which was the third wife, Georgiana Yoke, on January 17th, 1894, in Denver, Colorado, while he was still married to both Clara and Marta. He currently had two children, Lucy Theodore Holmes, which he had from Myrta, and Robert from Clara. Yeah, that's it for his personal life. If you see, most of the serial killers, he did not have a fucked up childhood or any childhood trauma except being bullied once. Which he did not even have a bad impact on him. So, it's like, clearly he has some mental health issues. So let's go over his crime life. Crime life. Oh God. So the victims, like 9 confirmed, 27 confessed, suspected to kill over 200 people. Like not 200, mostly 130, but to round off 200. His first kill was to be known as a boy, still not confirmed, but his last kill was Benjamin Peitzel or the three kids, and just any one of them. And his MO, or the modus operandi, was to gas his victims to death in a locked room and then add fire to torch the flesh of the children. And the victim name or age range or maybe gender is, I just have the list. And he mostly went for young women are in their 20s or 30s, late 20s and early 30s. So, just from 20s and 30s, maybe late, we don't know that. So, first is Julia Connor and her daughter Paul Connor in 1891. Then there was Emmeline Sigrand in 1892. Then Minnie Williams and Nanny Williams, 1893. And the three out of Peitzel children, we don't have the time. And Benjamin Peitzel, we don't have the time too. He just threw him near a dumping ground in Philadelphia. Like, didn't even dispose his body. His go-to line was, when women disappeared, was, "She has gone to Europe to get married." And he was convicted for first degree murder. Penalty was death by hanging. And this, most of the places where he mostly was active was Illinois, Indiana, and Ontario. I think that's what is pronounced. And the date he was apprehended was 17 November 1894. He was also a con artist, a bigamist, and he a subject of 50 lawsuits in Chicago alone. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, that's it, man. And I think that's it. The construction of the... And he called the hotel that he willingly burned down for the insurance money, the payout, was known as the murder hotel or the murder castle. It was a mystery to many, even those who are building it. Okay. And he made his business partner fake his own death. I think I'm done with H.H. Holmes forever. I think that's it. 30 minutes. Great. I thought this was gonna be the longest case, but it wasn't. It's fine. I think that's it. He's a mystery. He is also thought to be Jack the Ripper. We don't know. If you want to know about H.H. Holmes, you can... There are many books about him. There are many TV shows about him. And you can always... you can download many apps. I think there are not many apps. But there are apps. And there are many websites for you to know about. And if I did mention anything, or one of my fact was wrong, or like I did not mention a fact, or I did not mention one point, you can tell me. I'm all open to it. And yeah, that's it. Goodbye, H.H. Holmes. I will not miss you. H.H. Holmes once said that... H.H. Holmes is so weird pronouncing it. That I was born with a devil in me. Many of us are. We just don't know that. He knew and he did. And karma got him. I don't know, man, why I said that, but before judging anybody else, we should look who we are, and we could have been the same person they are, because serial killers did a lot of bad deeds, but judging them as in a person is not what we should do. That's what my motive with Faceless and Forgotten is. Not judging criminals, or not judging people on the basis of their good deeds. I think everybody knows that. People listening out there, like, we know that, but you don't apply it. You don't think of it. You do that a lot of times. Because there is difference between everybody is different, even serial killers. That's what it is. And I want to wish Jane Taupin a very happy birthday to the grave. She confessed to 31 murders. And there are a lot of Christopher Walken, a lot of people you think should be, okay, whatever. I don't know why I'm getting bored, and I'm actually getting fucked in my mind. Happy birthday, Jane Taupin. And if it was a birthday of any of you, happy birthday. See you next time, listeners. And okay, stay quarantined. Stay safe. Spend this time with my podcast and your loved ones. And stay tuned for a few more episodes of Faceless and Forgotten. And I know I'm not the greatest narrator here, but I try my best. Thank you. I love you so much. And that's it. I don't know why I do that, but I love it. So that's it. I'm bored and I'm quarantined. I think I'm having a quarantine meltdown, so I need to go. See you next time, listeners. See you next time. Bye-bye. Stay safe and don't kill anyone.